That war is a means, not an end, is a harmful truism. Only the most consciously perverse have ever maintained that war was their end. Even then, the degree to which they believe their assertion is debatable. There were moments when I thought Galen might not have any purpose beyond the destruction he caused. The collapse of order in the streets of Macragge Civitas did, at first glance, provide evidence of conflict for its own sake. But a dispassionate examination of Galen's actions reveals the opposite. Though his tactics were ill-advised, governed far more by anger than by analysis of any rigor, they still had a clear purpose. The suppression of opposition to his regime, and the elimination of even the desire to oppose him. So it is with all warriors. War has a purpose. Yet, a still deeper examination reveals the very dangerous fallacy shored up by this logic. Galen had a goal, but the effect of his tactics far exceeded what was intended, and ultimately worked against that goal. He created a situation that, had it been permitted to continue, would have engendered perpetual violence. It would have been necessary for him to maintain the rule of terror and violence to eliminate opposition, whether such opposition existed or not. This, then, is the great risk of war. Its power is so great, it can easily become self-sustaining. The stated ends become rationalizations, in effect the means to the goal of endless war. The prospect of the imminent conclusion to my father's great crusade fills some of my brothers with melancholy. I understand, and to a degree, share in this reaction. But I know enough to be wary of it. It gives me a greater, more profound pleasure to contemplate the fact that, our work done, we will have gifted humanity with a true end to war. Gilliman, Reflections, Third Fragment, 32. Chapter 8. Suns and Destroyers. Precision. The Last Descent. As Gilliman's march moved north, the gunships moved their strafing runs to the south. A barrier of fire rose between the ultramarines and the pyramid. The tide had turned completely now. The orcs emerging from the tunnels no longer streamed towards the pyramid. Many still came from that structure and ran straight into the Thunderhawk's fire. The artillery barrage from Gilliman's long-range guns was now aimed at the base of the exposed peak, hitting the orcs as they swarmed out of the tunnels. Gage voxed, "Is it my imagination, or are we finally thinning their numbers?" "I think we are," Gilliman said. There were still thousands of orcs. They covered the slope. But Gage was right. They did not appear to be reinforced by an inexhaustible resupply. The ultramarines at last were killing the orcs faster than the greenskins could summon reinforcements. The drop pods came down within 100 yards of the targeted crevasse. They punched shallow craters in the rubble of the slide. They crushed and incinerated scores of orcs clambering over the rocks to get to Gilliman's line. The hatches blew open, and the destroyers entered the field. The mob of orcs caught between the 1st chapter's infantry and the 22nd chapter's destroyers survived less than 5 minutes. The two lines of ultramarines advanced to meet each other through the bodies of the greenskins. When the last of the mob went down under a hail of shells, Gilliman looked at the legionaries before him. "These two are my sons," he reminded himself. He needed to. There was a distance between him and the destroyers. They were a necessary unit, but they were an imperfect fit with his vision of the ultramarines. Even their armor marked them as separate. It was black. The blue of the 13th Legion was present on their pauldrons and in a single vertical stripe down the center of their helms, but almost nowhere else. Gilliman had noticed the same approach to colors in the destroyers of Fulgrim and Corvus's legions, as if they had more in common with members of the same specialization than with their brother legionaries. It was an impression he did not want reinforced into a reality. This was why Gilliman had made Iasus chapter master of the 22nd. He would set a tone more in keeping with the other chapters of the Legion. Many of the destroyers wore raptor icons suspended from the belts at their waists. The birds of prey were another mark of difference. They were reminders that their bearers had come from Terra. The face of the Legion was changing, but far more slowly in the second destroyers. Hyrax had brought the entire company, as far as Gilliman could tell, with the exception of the heavy support. One of the drop pods had even brought the dreadnought Lavius. Gilliman had noticed that the ancient warrior had killed orcs using only his power fist. "What is your cannon armed with?" he wondered. He saw many armaments that made him grimace with distaste. He knew without asking that the missiles of the rocket launchers were radiation weapons. This was the identity of the destroyers. It was why they existed. He had not disbanded them. He had never banned their way of war, but he had removed them from the standard conduct of the wars of the 13th Legion. They were last resorts. They must be so, for they left poisoned ruin in their wake. They were the warriors of extinction and extermination. But the rad and bio-alchem weapons were holstered or slung over their backs. They had killed the orcs with bolter fire. Gilliman saw and appreciated the respect they showed him. They had come to do their duty, not push their agenda. Hyrax walked ahead of his company. He removed his helmet and stood before Gilliman. "We are ready to do what you need of us," he said. "You are welcome to this field," said Gilliman, "and to the aid of your chapter master." He looked at Hyrax's bald, war-ravaged features and saw the pride of duty that shone through them. "We are eager to join him," Hyrax said. He looked past Gilliman. "Victory on this battlefield is close at hand, I see." The legionaries of the first chapter had established a perimeter on the south side of the crevasse. They were holding the orcs back. There was no break in their fire. Nothing could approach from the south without being turned into bleeding meat. Hyrax was right. The ranks of the orcs had thinned noticeably in the last few minutes. They were scattered across the slope. They were still attacking, but they could not muster a concentrated charge. Very few managed to come near enough to require a legionary to use his blade instead of his bolter. Upslope, to the east, the stream of orcs coming from the exposed tunnels had slowed to a trickle. The battle on this side of the pyramid was effectively over. Gilliman frowned. He knew how many he and his sons had killed. There were too few orcs. "Habron," he voxed, "what is the situation south of our position?" "The consolidations are successful. The other chapters are beginning the process of extermination." "So where have the orcs gone?" "As some of the hordes withdraw, they also diminish in size," Habron said. "So they're going back underground." "Apparently." Gilliman turned to Hyrax. "Your hypothesis is gathering credibility by the second. The orcs are abandoning the field and returning to the tunnels. The surviving 22nd cannot be that powerful a lure. Something else is calling them." Hyrax glanced at the crevasse.
"If the withdrawal began when we took this location,"
Gilliman nodded,
"they see that we intend to descend."
"Theoretical," Hyrax said. "The orcs are desperate to stop our move into the deep tunnels. Their prize is there, and of gigantic importance to them."
"Practical," Gilliman responded.
"We shall do what they most fear."
The descent began a few minutes later. Gilliman took a third of his infantry below, leaving the Invictari to command the rest and direct the final annihilation of the orcs at the surface. Gage led the legionaries of the first chapter. Gilliman marched with the second destroyers. He gave Hyrax and his troops the honor of being at the front of the rescue of the battered 22nd chapter. They would also know he was watching.
"They, too, are my sons. They must know this, too, and all that comes with being of my blood."
The sides of the crevasse were steep, but along its length, as it widened gradually, there was a fall of rubble, creating a drop just gradual enough for the ultramarines to use it as a path to the depths. Even Lavius could maneuver his ponderous bulk down, his power fist smashing larger boulders to dust along the way.
"Have you pinpointed the position of the 22nd? Gilliman asked Habron as the march began. "The signals still lack precision. My best estimate is that they are at a level approximately equal to halfway down the crevasse." "Then we will enter the tunnels there and trust to come within range of Captain Iasis's Vox transmissions."
"He will be grateful for your swift arrival," Habron said.
"That bad? Based on his last message, yes."
They annihilated the first orc contingent. But three junctions on, the greenskins stopped the 22nd's advance. Iasis had no idea how far the crevasse was from his chapter's current position. It didn't matter.
"We aren't going any further."
The junction was a tangle of narrow tunnels, heading off in half a dozen directions. The orcs came out of all of them. Their snarls were expressions of absolute rage. There was no joy of battle now. Giants led the charge, orcs so large they had to hunch forwards or scrape their skulls against the ceiling. They wielded chain axes and cleavers so huge they chopped through walls. They tramped smaller orcs in their rush to engage the ultramarines.
bellowing, powerful as a flesh dreadnought, a monster charged at Iasus. He jumped back from the axe's swing. He pumped the orc full of mass-reactive shells. Blood jetted, drenching him. The beast kept coming. It brought its axe in again, low and from the side. There would be no evasion. Iasus swung his power sword at the weapon. He sliced through the chain and the edge of the blade. The whiplash of the chain spoiled the blow, tilting the blade. It hit him at an angle, the main force of the hit crushing instead of cutting. The axe smashed him against the side of the wall, gouged a chunk out of his armor, and sank through his carapace and into his fused ribs. Bone cracked. His blood mixed with the orc's. The orc grunted and pulled the axe free. It raised the weapon over its head. Iasus shook off his stun and lunged upwards with his sword. The blade's energy seared the air as it plunged through flesh. Iasus drove it up beneath the orc's chin and out through its crown. Its jaw sagged. Its small, furious eyes went dim. Its arms trembled a moment longer, as if the corpse sought to complete that final strike. Then the huge mass collapsed. Iasus withdrew the sword and stepped back. There was another giant brute behind the first. Others had forced their way past his right flank while he fought. They were working their way down the tunnel, pushing the ultramarines back, dismembering them with colossal blows. They absorbed bolter shells as if they were hewn from the mountain itself. Burrus had lost his left hand. Cursing, he slashed at the orc with his chainsword. Behind him, still another monster had smashed a legionary's helmet and skull with a stone hammer that must have weighed half a ton. "Back!" Iasus shouted. He threw himself right, away from the cleaver of his new attacker, and put a burst of 6 shells through the forehead of Burrus's foe. 20 paces back and east! They had passed a space where several walls had fallen, one knocking the next down, turning several adjoining tunnels into a large cavern. There was space there to form up and hit the orcs with combined fire. The ultramarines retreated. The orcs came at them with lumbering fury. They felled 2 more brothers with blows that crushed and severed. At the gap, the 22nd contracted into a massed square, 12 legionaries in length, 2 rows deep, 1 crouching, the other standing. The orcs circled, trying to find a gap, failing and charging anyway, to be burned and shot by multiple bolters and flamers. The boiling river of smaller orcs flowed behind the giants, shrieking their anger. Some, in their need to kill, streamed between the monsters. They were brought down, but the shells they absorbed gave the huge brutes the chance to reach closer and land blows before the sheer hail of ordnance and jets of flaming promethium dropped them.
"I think we've done something to upset them,"
Burrus hissed between gritted teeth as he fired. He was crouched before Iasus. He had maglocked his chainsword to his wrist and was wielding his bolter one-handed. His stump no longer bled.
"Our presence has triggered something," Iasus said. "Do you sense it, brothers?" he voxed. "Do you smell the stench from the greenskins? It's desperation."
"If they're that desperate for us to leave," Burrus said, "they could have simply stepped aside."
Iasus grunted in amusement. "Reloading," he said, and Burrus unleashed a long burst. The legionaries were in a good position. They could hold the orcs for some time. But that would be all. There would be no more advancing, not against a horde this size. Iasus accepted the truth of the situation. This space was where the 22nd would end. He tried raising Loxias on the vox. The tech marine had fallen silent. Iasus sensed the coming of change before he heard it. The movement of the orcs altered. It became even more frantic. There was confusion, too, he thought. Instead of the constant frothing circle, there were countercurrents as some orcs sought to push their way back out of the chamber. The vox crackled to life.
"Chapter Master Iasus," said a voice. The voice. Deep, resonant, calm with the authority of the absolute strategist. It was the voice of true nobility. Iasus had witnessed the false kind on Macrag. He had been there to see the misrule of Galen. He had seen the ambitious and the proud seek to raise themselves above their kin, and in so doing corrupt themselves, make themselves into things of contempt. The true nobility did not need to prove itself. It simply was, a fact as indisputable as the orbit of planets and the majesty of stars.
"Lord Gilliman,"
Iasus said. He wondered if he was giving in to a false hope. In the chaos of snarls and gunfire, perhaps he had imagined hearing his name. The voice spoke again, and it was real.
"We are coming to relieve you, Chapter Master," Gilliman said. I think it unnecessary to ask if you are the one who has excited the Greenskins to such a degree. We have had an effect on them, it is true. Hold fast, Iasus. We will be there soon.
Legionaries of the 22nd, Iasus foxed, grinning. Our Primarch approaches. Courage and honor!
Courage and honor!
Iasus was sure the bolter shells flew with greater energy and force. Huge bodies exploded. Orc warlords reduced to slabs of stinking flesh hit the floor, shaking the stone. The monsters howled with greater and greater fury, greater and greater desperation. A few moments later, Iasus heard a series of deep, booming concussions. The orcs heard them too. Even the largest turned at the sound. A great bell was tolling, and it was coming for the Greenskins. The concussions came closer, shaking dust from the ceiling. There was gunfire, too, and the sharp, destructive blast of grenades. The sounds came from the south, to Iasus's left. The sounds of the orc horde changed there. The desperation reached a new level of intensity. The rage surpassed all reason.
"Is that panic?" Burrus asked.
Iasus wondered the same. He did not think orcs were capable of panic, not in human terms. If it was not panic he heard, then he lacked the word to describe the phenomenon. The howling was higher pitched. It was so all-consuming it seemed as if the throats making that sound should have torn themselves open. A few paces from Iasus, the two largest orcs glared at him, then turned south. They hefted their weapons, chain axes so thick they could have been hammers. They roared, and the smaller brutes they commanded began to turn away from the 22nd. The orcs did not have a chance to leave. The concussion arrived.
Gilliman arrived.
The Primarch emerged from the darkness of the tunnels, bearing light and death. His left fist was bathed in cerulean and scarlet energy. The muzzles of his combi bolter flashed, explosive death bursting from the barrels. He punched the nearest of the orc giants. The green skin towered over Gilliman, yet it seemed to Iasus the Primarch's head touched the ceiling, and it was the orc who had to look upwards in the split second before it vanished, torn asunder by the discharge of the power gauntlet. Gilliman was relentless, but it was the precision of his relentlessness that stunned Iasus. He believed without question in the imperial truth and in the philosophy of pure reason espoused by Gilliman, but now, as he watched Gilliman fight, he saw the absolute precision of each movement. Blow, sidestep, trigger pull, a sweeping gesture around the falling hulk to smash the next. Every act occurred because reason said it must, in the order dictated by reason. Iasus witnessed the perfection of precision, and he understood at last the resilient mortal need to believe in the divine. Gilliman killed the last of the giant orcs in the chamber within the first 10 seconds of his arrival. The lesser orcs screamed their horror. They attacked him all the same, and they died even more quickly. Moments behind Gilliman came the second destroyers. They entered the cavern like the march of night. They killed with excess, pouring more shells than were necessary into the foe, reducing every enemy to unrecognizable pulp. The orcs were caught now between Iasus's formation, Gilliman, and Hyrax's company. By the time legionaries of the first chapter arrived with Marius Gage, there was nothing left to kill. Hyrax approached Iasus. He removed his helmet and saluted.
"I am glad to find you well, Chapter Master," he said.
"I'm glad to hear you say so." Iasus meant the remark as a jest. He saw Hyrax wince.
"I am sorry for our chapter's great losses," the destroyer captain said.
"As am I," said Iasus. "The fallen will be honored."
Hyrax lowered his head in solemn agreement, then looked up.
"Their mistakes will also be studied."
"You believe so?"
"When the consequences are so grave, the study is vital."
Iasus clasped Hyrax's pauldron.
"At the same time, a life given to service must not be reduced to one error."
Cirrus's name will not become synonymous with folly, Iasus thought.
"Thank you, Chapter Master," Hyrax said.
Gilliman appeared at Hyrax's shoulder. The captain stepped aside.
"Legionary Burrus says the orcs became uncharacteristically desperate to halt your advance," he said to Iasus.
"Yes, they did." "Did their distress grow worse when you advanced in a particular direction?"
Iasus thought through the beats of the battle.
"Yes," he realized. "When we moved southeast of here."
"Show me,"
Gilliman said. They found the ramp 100 yards beyond the last position the 22nd had reached before the orcs turned them back. Past a major junction, the southern branch widened. The tunnel was as large as the ones in the upper levels of the pyramids and mountains. It dropped at a steep gradient, though Gilliman judged that it was still within the capabilities of most vehicles to climb. The northern branch was filled with rubble, but it was too broad. Had it been clear, Gilliman suspected he would have seen a ramp going up towards the surface. The descending path turned sharply every few hundred yards, doubling back on itself. It was a colossal switchback heading down to the roots of the mountains. Orc snarls echoed from the depths. This far away, the sound of the horde was a low grumble of thunder.
"We know where they have gone," he said.
He had brought his commanders forwards. He, Gage, Iasis, and Hyrax marched together at the head of the column.
"There must be entrances at the base of the Cordillera, too," Iasis said. "We noted the horde appear to shrink at one moment."
"Likely so," Gilliman agreed. "The question, then, is what is so important to the orcs?"
He turned to Hyrax.
"This is your hypothesis, Captain. Extrapolate."
"Weapons,"
Hyrax told Iasis.
"They would account for the radiation levels of this region and the orcs' interest. This, too,"
he gestured at the ramp,
"a means to transport large quantities of something quickly below the surface."
"Interesting the creators of the tunnels did not use one of their shafts," Gage said.
"For very large quantities of ordnance, for example, this would be faster. Entire convoys of transporters could take this route."
After a moment, Iasis said,
"What kind of weapons?"
"I would be speculating rather than extrapolating."
"Do so,"
Gilliman said. He knew the answer. He suspected Iasis did too. The long-term radiation was the key. He wanted Hyrax to say the words, though. There must be a unity of presumptions across his force.
"Rad missiles, or something very like them,"
Hyrax said.
"At the least."
"What use would they be to the orcs?"
Iasis asked.
"The greenskins would never be capable of figuring out how to launch them."
"True,"
Gilliman said.
"That does not rule out the possibility of a catastrophic accident."
"Why rad missiles?"
Gage said. He seemed to be speaking to himself more than to the others.
"Against whom? We haven't found any trace of who the creators of this fortress complex had as an enemy."
No one answered. Gilliman sensed the answer waited below. If there were weapons there, they would be the only artifacts beyond the fading murals to have survived the civilization's disappearance. Their presence made the presence of other relics more likely. "You will not like the answer." That voice, a dark intuition that shunned the principles of reason, gnawed at his peace of mind. The ramp dropped further and further, back and forth, hundreds of yards in one direction, then hundreds in the other, dropping a full mile, two, then three. The orc rage rose to meet them, ever louder. There were thousands waiting below, guarding something they could never use.
"This is the heart of your empire," Gilliman wanted to tell them. "In the end, this is what you will fight to own. Your extermination will be a mercy for you as well. Your purpose is empty."
The ramp turned back on itself one last time. It carried on several hundred yards more, then leveled off and turned sharply to the right into a huge opening, the largest Gilliman had seen in the complex. It glowed with a dull crimson light, flickering, irregularly pulsing. The orcs were there, spilling out of the entrance, their rage shaking cavern walls. The green tide had become a wall.
"My sons," said Gilliman, "let us end this war."